I'd like to just read to you two or three pieces of information concerning the background of Brother Rascone. Emmy Award-winning reporter and anchor Art Rascone joined KTRK-TV 13 Eyewitness News in September 1998 to serve as anchor. Since joining ABC 13, Brother Rascone has covered such major events as the Iraq War, the Balkans War, conflicts in the Middle East and Central America, the U.S. presidential elections, and many others. He previously worked for CBS Network, where he was correspondent for the evening news with Dan Rather. From 1989 to 1994, Brother Rascone was at KABC-TV, worked with KABC-TV in Los Angeles, where he worked as a producer, reporter, and anchor in several cities. Brother Rascone has reported from more than 50 countries, five continents, and nearly every state in the Union. He's won 19 Emmys and is also the recipient of more than a dozen outstanding reporting awards from press clubs in Los Angeles, Miami, and Houston. The National Hispanic Business Magazine also named him one of the 100 most influential Hispanics in America. Brother Rascone is a graduate of RICS. We might mention also, I believe that Sister Rascone attended RICS, and at Brigham Young University with a degree in communications and journalism. He also studied humanities and European politics in Madrid, Spain. He served in the church in a number of positions, including bishop, counselor and bishopric, high counselor, stake young men's presidents, stake mission president, elders' quorum presidents, and in the young men's and in the primary organization. He served a full-time mission, the Arcadia, California mission. He and his wife, Patty, have six children. Again, we express gratitude to Brother Rascone for being with us today and now have the opportunity of hearing from him.
Thank you so much, Brother Broadhead. Appreciate your wonderful hospitality here in Rexburg. This has been absolutely a wonderful opportunity for my wife and myself to visit again in a place that we like to call home, and in a place in which we met. And if you can believe this, it was back in... My wife is telling me, shh. 1980, 28 years ago. There is such a wonderful and a beautiful spirit here at this university, and it carries on the great spirit of Ricks College. And as we were driving in just last night, in fact, as we were making our way to Rexburg, I was holding hands with my dear bride, and she said, "This is the first time you held my hand 28 years ago when we were driving from Idaho Falls to Rexburg. Do you remember that?" I said, "No, I'm sorry, I don't." She always remembers the details, and which is beautiful, and she always has. What a wonderful opportunity to be with you, young brothers and sisters. I can feel of your good spirit. It is overwhelming. And it's such a great opportunity to be able to be back because my wonderful son, Jacob, his lovely and dear bride and beautiful bride, Ashley, as well. My daughter, Natalie, and her, I won't say beautiful and lovely, but wise and handsome husband, Zuriel. And my dear parents as well drove up from Salt Lake City, so it's good to see them and have them here as well. I speak today on the media, and I've been involved with the media for, well, ever since I was here in 1980 and began to work in radio and television here. And so it has been a number of years. But professionally, I've been working now for some 23, 24 years. The media standing up to today's modern day Goliath. And we live in exciting times, don't we? I mean, we live in fabulous times. A time when the age of technology has taken us to a whole new world. Information on the internet, on the, you know, television screens and the big screen, the small screen, the iPods, the internet, the news blogs, all of this involving the great communication world of the media, newspapers and magazines and all of it. You know, it's exciting out there. There are indeed a lot is a lot out there of a technology and which has driven us into a new age. But as I think of these ages of technology and the advances in which have been made as well, I was reflecting upon an interview in which I had many years ago when I was working with the CBS National Network with Dan Rather. I had the opportunity of doing a story on the explosion in the internet among religious organizations using the internet to broadcast their message throughout the world. And while working with the CBS National Network, I had the occasion of interviewing Elder Irene, serving, of course, as a member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. He said back then in 1996, he said, despite the media's degrading values, we must remember something. The media is also the Lord's tool of bringing good into the world. We must utilize that purpose, and it is partly your responsibility to make that happen. The Lord has placed you in a position for a reason. And that was pretty overwhelming at that time when I heard that many, many years ago, 12 years ago. And then he went on to say, I believe the two greatest influences for good in the lives of the children of men in the next century will be in the fields of communication and education. So prophetic indeed, because that's exactly what we find. The world of communication is so, so influential. What you say, what you write, what you print, what you disseminate, what you give to the public will eventually have a profound effect on them. People view the media, news releases, the advertising media sometimes as truth. And sadly, they give way too much weight into the arms and hands and pencils and pens and keyboards of today's journalists. And they accept that as truth. So you have a profound influence upon others. But what viewership needs to be, of course, is far more selective. So it is important, I believe, in the world of communication to share those accounts in which will be somewhat uplifting, in which will be motivating, inspiring to some degree. There is so much ugliness in the world today, so much filth and degrading values out there in today's society, that we must remember to always exemplify the good, because there is so much good that often goes unnoticed. I was in Central America many, many years ago, sharing the account of a Cardinal Oscar Rodriguez, who was one of those cardinals and who would have become the next pontiff after Pope John Paul passed away. I was interviewing some of those leading cardinals throughout the world, and then traveling as well to Rome during the death of Pope John Paul. But while I was there in Tegucigalpa, Honduras, what I stumbled upon became far more influential in anyone's mind. But yet, as you look at the world, it was such a simple thing that occurred, but yet so profound. As I was walking the downtown area of the city, there was this young man who began to follow us. I turned and said, he obviously looked destitute. What's your name? Marlo, he said. I said, Marlo, how old are you? I'm 16 years old. I said, Marlo, you look like you don't have a home. What's your situation? Where do you live? He said, I live over here under a bridge. And I said, Marlo, can you take us to there, that location? And so we dropped whatever we were doing, the story that we initially thought was the more profound piece, to instead follow Marlo, a 16-year-old boy living in Tegucigalpa, Honduras. And so we followed Marlo under the bridge. He showed us where he lived, cardboard boxes there, little rooftops as well that they made. I said, Marlo, where are your parents? My mother left me when I was 7 years old, he said. I said, what about your father? He left when I was 9 years old. I said, where did they go? They immigrated to the United States. They smuggled their way in and promised me that eventually they would be back to get me. But they never came back. I said, what do you do for daily sustenance? You've been alone now for 7 years on the streets. What do you do to survive? He took me over. We walked downtown the Market Street, made a right turn, went into the back of the Market Street area. Right there, where at the end of the day, they bring all the wheelbarrows and dump them full of garbage into this mass city dump. And there he began to sift through this, what the scavengers were fighting for as well, for his daily sustenance. An old banana, a rotten piece of food, and a few other items, nibbled on them, threw them off to the side. After talking with Marlo, we took him, said, "Marlo, let's go get you some food." And so we go off to a restaurant at the end of the day. We order him a big sandwich. We both sit down, my photographer and I, and I'm sitting there with a big sandwich, and he has his sandwich. And just as I'm ready to take a bite of the sandwich, he said, "Wait, espera." I said, "What's wrong, Marlo?" He said, "We need to pray." And I thought, wow, here's a 16-year-old boy, so destitute, with nothing. I'm serving as a bishop at the time, reminding me that we need to pray. And I said, "Marlo, could you offer the prayer?" He said, "Sure." And here are the words he spoke. "Dear God, thank you for this day. I thank you for life. And I thank you for these people who have come. I thank you for everything which I have. In Jesus' name, amen." And I thought, wow, here is a young man who has taught me something about gratitude, more so than I had ever discovered in the past. And so it is these small, simple moments where the true heart of individuals come alive. Not in the profound story in which we were covering that had so much international drama to it as the inauguration and consideration of a new pontiff. But no, instead it was out of the heart of a 16-year-old boy who taught me something about gratitude and how we live in an area and in an age in which so little of it is being expressed. We live, as the Apostle Paul so demonstrated in his letter to Timothy, we live in perilous times. There is no question about this. Look about you. Look what's happening on the news today. Look at the influences in which are being portrayed in the news media. Look at the crash of the stock market. Look at the ups and down swings of it. We live in perilous times. There's no question about it. Look at the tsunami. Look at other natural disasters in which have hit our world over the past number of decades. If you take the past three decades and look at the natural disasters, the problems, the riots, the chaos, the anarchy, the lawlessness in which has occurred so rapidly and seemingly in a matter of hours, and how the complete breakdown of society can occur, then we have just a glimpse of how this world can fall into chaos so quickly, and the changes of these perilous times in which we live. And so how important it is for us to live as important examples in the world today. And as I continue to discuss these things and share various experiences and stories, keep in mind the question, how do we stand up to today's modern day Goliath? Speaking of natural disasters, I'll never forget my time in Banda Aceh, Indonesia, covering the massive tsunami in which hit that area. What an awful situation that was. So powerful. It just swept away, literally swept away entire villages with little nothing left there. Only the foundations existed, and not even those sometimes. So powerful in nature, you think of the massive wave that 40, 50 feet high that crashed up against the shoreline. As I spoke with people there on the beach in whom were left, my question was, how did you survive? What did you do? And several times I heard the same answer. I clung to the tree. I said, "The tree? What tree?" "These trees," they would point out as they took me step by step and showed me this massive tree. It has a large trunk that comes up, and its branches stem in all directions. And from those branches grow more roots. It is a deeply rooted, dozens of roots, sometimes even hundreds of roots into the ground these trees will go. We clung to the tree. The wave would come. It would hit us. We would grab a hold of the tree. Everyone would try and grab on. There must have been 20, 30 people on one tree. And then the wave would wash out. The tsunami would leave. And then there would be maybe 3 or 4 people left that were able to still hang on. And what were they hanging on to in their times of great trouble? Something that was deeply rooted. Something that was secure. Something that was steady. Something that held them through and nothing else. Like Hurricane Ike hit Houston only a few weeks ago. Many of you might remember. I'm from Houston, of course. Covered this storm. Massive hurricane. Hurricane Ike. Category 2 storm, near a Category 3, but its surge, its waves, which are like mini tsunamis, were at a Category 4 strength or even a Category 5 strength. I went up and down the coast and was reporting from all of that area to the national networks on the ABC family. Massive disaster. Thousands of homes lost. Thousands. Simply destroyed. Some areas like the tsunami area. They were simply swept out to sea. But as I was on the peninsula just outside of Galveston in Galveston County, the peninsula, which had maybe 5,000-6,000 homes on it, most of them were washed out to sea. And as I was in one town called Gilcrest, standing along the beach with most of the beachfront property gone, I noticed one home on stilts, high up in the air, almost looked as if it was untouched. I walked up to this home and realized that not even a single shingle had been shaken from its rooftop. The windows were all there. The siding was there. The pylons were there. Everything was there. I looked up and down the coast. There was nothing. Everything else was completely gone. So I began questioning about what happened to this house. Oh, that house. The yellow house, I was told. Yeah, that was built 6 months ago to withstand hurricane strengths of more than 200 miles per hour, a Category 5 or 6, if it ever happened. Built powerful and strong. Immediately, I thought of that wonderful scripture of building up our armor of God. What are we doing to build our breastplate with righteousness? What are we doing to withstand the wiles of the evil one? What are we doing in today's technological society with so many great advancements to be the example to stand above the crowd? And then I thought of that wonderful scripture. He who heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, and what's the action verb there? To do, to call to action. To jump and do something. And do with them, I will liken him unto the man who built his house upon a rock. And the winds came, and the rains descended, the floods came as well, and all things descended upon that house, but what happened to that house? It stood. It was secure. It is not so much a story about the house, but it is a story about the man. What did the man do in this circumstance? He was steady. He was strong. He was not giving in to the buffetings of the adversary, so to speak, symbolically. How much more we need to do this? And what happened to the foolish man who built his house upon the sand? Of course, it washed away. Meaning, in fact, symbolically, that the man's testimony was lost. It is so important in this age of technology and all in which we experience out there in the media world to stand up to what is becoming prolific in the eyes of the media, in the media world, that of pornography, that of filth, sleazy programming, questionable writing, which is distasteful. We must be balanced, brothers and sisters. We must be focused in our life. Let us be focused always and understand what it is we need to accomplish. I'll never forget covering back in 1997, excuse me, the sesquicentennial of the wagon train that was making its way from Nauvoo, from winter quarters, all the way to Salt Lake Valley. And 150 years later, after the original event, some Mormon pioneers, some history buffs, some, you know, ancestors of the pioneers, reenacting this entire journey across the plains. What a wonderful thing that was to witness. And I had suggested to the CBS producers of the news, I said, hey, why don't we go cover this and make a great, you know, morning story? And they said, terrific. Yeah, go out and spend, you know, a few days out there covering it and come back and we'll put together, you know, 4 or 5 minute story, which is a long time in the morning news program. So we went out there and we covered the event. And we arrived and they're sitting around a campfire. And of course, in order for us to get the video and the interviews and everything in which we needed on the wagon train, we needed someone to drive our vehicle. Now, those participants who were out there and who were, you know, the Mormons and the history buffs, they didn't know. They just knew we were New Yorkers who came down to cover this story. And so I offer, who can drive our vehicle for us to sort of hopscotch our way as we're on the wagon train? This one young man raises his hand. I'll do it. And I said, great, what's your name? Les, he said. Les Anderson. I said, great, Les. Here you go, there are the keys. Your job is to simply drive us around, okay, for the next few days. He said, great, that'll get me off the horse. So he was happy about that. And so the next morning, I say, okay, Les, let's go. We're in the vehicle. By the way, Les, you have your driver's license, I presume. Yes, he says hesitantly. I said, did you just get your license? Yeah, I got it just a few weeks ago. He said, okay. I said, okay, well, let's move. That's okay. I trust you. So we went on our way. And my first question to Les as we were driving was this. Hey, Les. And he was driving and I was sitting in the passenger seat, producer and photographer in the back seat. I said, hey, Les, are you one of these Mormons? He looked over at me. And I was shocked at his answer. Yes, I am. I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We went on, popped Les a few more questions. Les, I understand there's some strict guideline about, you know, some so you can't smoke or you can't drink. Tell me about that. It's called the Word of Wisdom, he said, revealed to Joseph Smith. And here it is. So he explains it all. A wonderful account. We're into several days of this. The third day after I am hitting Les with all sorts of questions. Les, I understand that people, when they're 19 years old, they go on something called a mission or something like that. What is that? Tell me about that. Yep, that's what they do. 19 years old, young men, they go off and serve a mission. And I said, Les, come on. Now let's be real. I said, Les, 19 years old, you have so much ahead of you. You have girls, you have college, you have so many other things you can be taken advantage of. Why in the world would you ever want to go on a mission to serve for 2 years? He stopped the car. And he looked over at me. And he said these words. He said, because I know it's true. And I said, wow. This is good. And my producer spoke up at that time, wondering why this brakes had been slammed on. She said, Art, why do you keep pestering Les with all of these questions? And then she turns to Les and says, Les, don't you know that Art Rascone is a Mormon? And Les turned bright red. I felt so bad. His mouth dropped and he said, you're a Mormon? I said, yes, Les. I serve as a high councilman in Florida. I am so sorry for deceiving you, but I just wanted to get an idea. Just an idea of where the average youth stood in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I was profoundly impressed by this young man who held up to who he thought were these big-time liberal reporters out of New York City wanting there to destroy the gospel. He was bold. He was not pretentious whatsoever. and he shared his light and example to me, and as a result, through the world. There are so many examples in which I could share of how the gospel has changed my life. I do feel impressed to share this one. I was working in Los Angeles for a number of years for ABC. The national network called CBS Evening News with Dan Rather. Popular program, very well known. I said, okay. I said, I'll go for an interview. So I went to New York City for an interview. There I sat in a large boardroom. And in that boardroom, Dan Rather's personal producer, the executive producer of the evening news, the president of CBS News, the vice president of CBS News, the president of the morning program, the president of the entertainment division, the executive producer of 60 Minutes and 48 Hours, all of these executives in this Oval Office where we ate breakfast. No questions were to be asked until the president of the CBS News asked the first question. After breakfast, he turns and to me, and I'm sitting right next to him, and the whole audience in that room with their eyes fixed on the president of the CBS News, wondering what that first question is going to be. He looks over my paperwork. He turns to me and says, Art, tell me about your missionary experience for the Mormon Church. I was shocked. I had prepared myself endlessly for the domestic questions of the world, the international questions, the questions regarding international politics, Middle East, Asia, Europe. And instead the question was, tell me about your missionary experience for the Mormon Church. So I gave him the first discussion. Although he never knew it. We talked for a time about that at the end of the day before I left that room, and after meeting individually with various executive producers. As he was saying goodbye, he shook my hand and he said, Art, I don't think you'll ever realize what that missionary experience really did for you by going door to door. I was like, wow, this is great. I thanked him and went on my way. Later, I was able to get the job for CBS News and work for a time with them. Anything good in which has happened in my life, there's no question that I would relate it and direct it to the missionary service in which I was able to give the Lord. It was an awesome, uplifting, motivating experience, and in one in which set, I believe, a great foundation for the wiles of the adversary which are out there. Remember, we are talking about technology here, in which is advanced to a stage in which in a millisecond you cannot receive all the information which is traveling through cyberspace. Enough information is out there to fill an entire lifetime. What are we going to do with that information? How are we going to influence? How are we going to stand up to this massive Goliath of today? Because by and large, the media is Satan's tool for bringing about the degradation of society. But there is so much, as Elder Irene said, President Irene said, that brings about so much good from the media. And that's what we need to remember as well. I spent a great deal of time in Iraq covering the war. And I went through a number of photographers there, but I'll never forget one photographer, real nice gentleman, Jewish, and not a place to be when you're in Iraq. But he turned to me when he arrived, and I'd already been there and traversing Iraq for a time. He said, Art Rascone, promise me one thing before I ride with you. And I said, what is that? He said, promise me that you won't get me killed. And I said, okay, I promise. I'll make a little prophecy here. You will not die during your coverage of this story. He said, great, that's good enough for me. So we went. And every day, it is my decision to take this crew right or left, to go straight, to interview this person, that person. And I'll never forget, about a week into our journey, we are driving down the streets of Baghdad. This is only a day after the massive statue of Saddam Hussein came collapsing down. About three cars in front of us, some hooded men jump out with AK-47s, completely covered head to toe except for their eyes. Three or four cars in front of us. My photographer just goes berserk. He's like screaming, just step on the gas, go around them, run them down. This poor man, this photographer, he had quit smoking 10 years ago, and during that past week had smoked more than he had in the past 5 years, so, which he had quit earlier, but he had taken up, unfortunately, smoking again. I said, everything is going to be okay. Don't worry. He turned to me and he said, but Art, you promised me that I would not be killed during the coverage of this story. Because in a few cars in front of us, they were yanking the people out of the vehicles. I said, you're right, Ben. I did promise you that. And I turned to him, but I did not promise you that we would not be kidnapped. He said, what? So he was quite startled by that, but naturally. But I said everything was going to be okay. And as we approached those men, Saddam Hussein loyalists who were standing there, they talked to us, waved the guns in front of us, pointed them at our heads, said a few words in Arabic, carried on about something, and they'd eventually waved us on. And he later asked, he said, how do I know? What am I supposed to do to when you're turning right or left? And why should I believe you? Why should I trust you? And I said these words. I said, because every morning before we leave, I have a prayer. And I thank God for being here. And I pray that his guidance will be and protection will be upon us, that we might live and that we'll be safe. And I feel I am following that direction. And my dear wife at home is praying for me. And my children and an entire ward who I was bishop of at that time. So he turns to me and says, okay, sounds great. I'll buy that. And so we move forward. And brothers and sisters, it happened again and again where individuals would ask you that. Stand up for what is right and be an example and be a person in whom is openly wanting the direction of the Spirit of God upon you, so that when you are in those critical positions of decision-making, that you will know what to say and what to do, and that those around you as well will recognize, hey, here's someone different. Here is someone who is following a higher standard, perhaps. I covered Katrina for a number of weeks. Initially, Hurricane Katrina, of course, hitting New Orleans. You're all familiar with this massive disaster that paralyzed that city and, in fact, the entire country, and was an embarrassment upon the entire country, I suppose, about the United States' reaction to such a disaster. I traversed my way up and down that coastline. I saw the good and the bad working together in many areas. The photographer in whom I had at that time was a great photographer and whom I've worked with for many, many years. We were traveling down about 2 o'clock in the morning on a freeway, complete darkness, no lights anywhere because of there was no electricity. Lots of debris in the road, traveling down a highway. It was a beach highway. We were trying to get from one point to another. And as we were traveling down this road at about 70 miles an hour, I felt prompted to suddenly slow down. So I slowed down to 50, then to 40. And my photographer turns over to me and says, what are you doing? We have places to be. We got to go. It's already 1 o'clock in the morning. We got to get moving. I said, I don't know. It just doesn't feel right. We need to slow down. I come down to 30, to 20, to 10. Suddenly, I come to a complete stop. There on some road, which I could not see where it went, where I was coming from, or the sides of me, or anything. I come to a complete stop, I get out of the car, and I begin walking forward on this highway. I come to just the edge of the headlights, and there in front of me, notice a 50 to 75 foot gap in the freeway, that had simply fallen, collapsed into the ocean, and it was simply open. And I thought, if I would have kept going, we would have lunged over the bridge or over that highway into the water and would likely have never been found. I called my photographer over. I said, "Hey, Johnny." I said, "Come here." He slowly walks over. "What's going on, Rascone? Let's get going." I said, "Come on over." He steps up, stands right beside me, and looks down into that gulf. He says, "Wow, I'm glad you stopped. I'm going to hang out with you more often." Brothers and sisters, we have the opportunity of receiving the inspiration of the Almighty in guiding our lives, in doing those things which we should. And it is so important to do that. Many of you remember Virginia Tech, 32 students killed in that awful shooting disaster of last year in April. I'll never forget the stories in which were coming out of that area. They were poignant. Many of them were just filled with what was wrong with the gunman. Many of them were filled as well with the logistics of everything that was happening. I decided instead to focus stories on the humanity of it all and those in whom were personally affected. I remember seeing a college student sitting down just in the grassy open area of the college and me walking up to her and simply saying, "Is there anything that I could do? Anything that I can comfort you with?" She said, "I just need a hug." And so we hugged. About 1 o'clock in the morning the following day, I decided to visit a makeshift memorial they're propping up, filled with flowers, condolences, cards, letters, spiritual notes. I began reading a lot of these and must have spent 1-2 hours just reading note after note after note. Said one note, "Christy, you were a wonderful roommate. Thank you for being my friend. Heaven is a better place for you there." I kept reading another poignant letter in which I read, and the most touching of all those in which I read. "Brian, I am so grateful for the time we had together. I will cherish it forever. I will miss you. But I guess God needed you most. Love, your father." And I sat and I pondered about that note for a moment, thinking of the relationship in which these two had, of the times they shared together, and the moments in which they had, in which blossomed that relationship to a point of where he could write such a note as that after his son had been so tragically taken only a few days earlier. That's what kind of dad I want to be, I thought. That's what kind of people we need to be. Forget about the professional world for a moment. Everything should be instead spiritually oriented in a way. Allow your thoughts about God and humanity to somehow guide your profession. And in doing so, you will see the goodness that can come out of your profession, whatever it might be in the media world. And as a result, you can make a better influence and have a better influence upon so many people. What will be our legacy? What will be our footprint? What will people write about us as we leave? And what kind of notes will they leave on a makeshift memorial? 2 days ago, I was on the anchor desk in ABC in Houston. And as I sit on the anchor desk, I always wear an earpiece, which gives me notice of things that are happening, in which case we need to go to breaking news or whatever it might be. As I was sitting there reading the news, I was told in my ear, the helicopter is moving to a double shooting, a homicide involving an officer. It's going to go to that location. I said, "Okay. This is not information we deliver over the air yet. It's just background information in which I'm receiving." A few minutes later, another voice in the ear from my producer, who is in the control room. She says, we have reports of a helicopter down, so we're going to go and cover that story about the helicopter which has crashed. I said, okay. Houston is a big town. We have all sorts of events that happen all the time. Nationally or internationally, we cover them immediately when they happen. The next voice in the ear. We have word that the helicopter that has crashed may be the ABC helicopter. Immediately, my heart drops. I think of those in whom I have worked with over the many years, the photographer and reporter on board that helicopter and the pilot. Soon another helicopter is in the air, not ours, but sending a signal, and we are allowed to share it, broadcasting live the impact in which this helicopter made on the ground and as well the resulting fire. And as we're watching pictures of this and ad-libbing about what presumably happened, and saying as well, this may be presumably our helicopter, the camera focuses on some insignia of debris in which is left from the helicopter, which reads ABC TV. So we learn there, as we're broadcasting live, the death of a colleague as a reporter and a photographer on board that helicopter and the pilot. It was a heartbreaking moment, for these were people in whom I have known for many years. And in fact, their funerals are on Saturday. But I thought about the fragility of life and how quickly one can be taken. And I thought as well about the fragility of everything around us. Look at the Los Angeles riots, in which in a matter of hours, an entire city explodes. I was there reporting from the streets of Central America as I watched in a matter of hours the city go from law-abiding citizens to lawlessness. From what you might say, peace to chaos. How it happened in a matter of hours. And how the stock market one day can be bursting and people be doing just fine, and then the next, suddenly shattering and collapsing, and millions and even trillions of dollars are lost. And how one moment I could be talking to a colleague on the air or in person, only the night before, and then the next afternoon reporting his death. Brothers and sisters, we live in dangerous times, fragile times, times that are changing quickly, in which the media, the communications world, is going to be responsible for reporting it. Look about you and look at all that is happening in today's world and how we know, as a people of faith and understanding the prophetic times in which we live, how the times of perilous times in which we live are only going to increase dramatically. And there is going to be, as the scriptures say, more commotion. The entire world will be in a state of commotion. You think we've witnessed commotion? We haven't tasted the brim of it. There is so much out there. Allow me to, in the couple minutes I have left, just read a portion of my journal, in which I only thought of this. I was, after General Conference, which was only a couple of weeks ago, such a spiritual high, such a wonderful time, and I went back to work on Monday morning. By Monday afternoon, I felt impressed to grab my journal and write a few words, and I feel impressed to share them with you. Back to work today, after such a wonderful, spiritually filled 2 days, it is a difficult place to be. I am surrounded now by worldly concerns. Everywhere I look, the media blares economic woes, financial crisis, political bickering, another battle that pits one man against another, another terrorist attack, drive-by killing, more legal battles of hate, greed, worse even murder or some sort of mayhem. Wars and conflicts rage abroad while stories of sorrow, scandal, and selfishness and cynicism fill the television screen, the daily newspapers, the internet news blogs. Oh, when will it end? How long must one endure the trials of a wicked world and witness such willful rebellion? Now more than ever, the gospel of peace is needed. It is the only answer and solution to the world's problems. We must understand something, brothers and sisters. As we answer the question now, the media standing up to today's modern-day Goliath, what is the answer? I believe it is this. The most important gift in which you have, the most important gift in which you can share, is that of your testimony of Jesus Christ. We cannot expect, young brothers and sisters, the world's solutions to answer the world's problems. It will not, it cannot, and it will never happen. As we look at the media in our nightly newscast, we see the latest scientific craze in which pits one diet program as the best, or one pill better than the other. None of it is true, because it is not absolute. It is outdone the next day by another scientific study and by another research program. The only thing in which is absolute, brothers and sisters, is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And truer conversion into the gospel of Jesus Christ and a testimony of Jesus the Christ will in fact lead to greater happiness and greater peace in this time of perilous times. It's like what C.S. Lewis once wrote. People everywhere are rushing around with fire extinguishers in times of a flood. They don't know where to turn. The where to turn, brothers and sisters, is upon our knees. Ye are the light of the world. A city which is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Ye are the salt of the earth, we are told. And what is the salt? Salt was used anciently, part of an ancient covenant, sacrifice ritual, a covenant in which the ancient Israel made. The salt was symbolic of that. What is today's covenant in which we make? That we will always remember him, that we can have his spirit to be with us. I leave you my testimony that God lives, that Jesus is the Christ, and that this is his church. I know that. There is no doubt in my mind, for I have heard the whisperings of the Spirit bear witness to me that yes, the Book of Mormon is the Word of God, that Joseph Smith is a prophet, and that this is his church. I am grateful for you, young brothers and sisters. What a beautiful university in which you have. What a wonderful place this is. I am grateful to my dear and loving wife, my sweetheart of 23 years, and whom has supported me and our 6 children through a variety of crazy stories and wild stories, and always been a bedrock of faith in the family. I leave you with this testimony and my love, and my hope as well that you might always move forward with greater earnestness to share your light with others. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.